All right, Alexander, let's talk a little bit about an article posted on Strategic Culture Foundation and also posted on the Duran via one of our contributors and authors, Matthew Errett. And he's an excellent author. He's got really good articles. You can also find him on his own site, the Canadian Patriot Review, as well. I'll put a link for that site in the description box down below. But I think this is an interesting article given the times we live in and the moment that we live in right now, which is a moment that calls for leadership. And we've talked about it in past videos about the difference real leadership makes at a time like this in a country undergoing this pandemic. And let me read you some parts of this article, which calls on Hamlet and Shakespeare and invokes the name of Bernie Sanders as well. But I think you can take this not only in the direction of Bernie Sanders, but you can probably apply it to a variety of world leaders that are doing good and are coming out ahead of this crisis and world leaders that are crumbling. So let me read you parts of the article, and then you can take it in whatever direction you would like to take it, Alexander, probably starting from Bernie Sanders and moving onwards. In Shakespeare's tragedy of Hamlet, the young prince has good reason to believe that his newly deceased father, the King of Denmark, has been murdered by his uncle, who also just so happens to have married the queen, Hamlet's mother, before his father's body was cold, hanging above the entire play like a sword of Damocles in an invasion planned by Norway, which is prepared to take over the kingdom. As the play unfolds, the young prince battles with himself. As a man loved by the people with a strong moral instinct and heir to the throne, he has a great power and responsibility to be Denmark's leader and raise a resistance to the coming onslaught. His elderly uncle will not live much longer, and real political power is at his fingertips. On the other hand, his burning passion to revenge his murdered father is all-consuming and blinds him to his higher moral duties, both to himself and the people. The schism between two opposing worlds is displayed perfectly in the famous soliloquy where the young prince asks whether he will choose to be or not to be. The prince gives in to his impotent fears and chooses not to be, giving in to his base impulses for revenge, which he knows will lead to his own destruction. After this soliloquy, Hamlet's fate, and that of Denmark's, is sealed and the tragedy runs its course. Bernie's Hamlet complex. Unlike most figures campaigning for political office with noble intentions, Bernie has been granted several chances to wrestle with his own fears of success and take a leading role in American politics. But up until now, he has chosen not to be each time. The first chance arrived famously in 2016, just as WikiLeaks exposed the sickening reality that the entire deep state apparatus controlling the DNC had conspired blatantly to crush his chances of gaining the party nomination to run in the elections. With the righteous indignation of a disenchanted Democratic voter base behind him, Bernie knew that he had a people's army on his side, as well as irrefutable evidence of conspiracy to destroy his candidacy in favor of Hillary. Had Bernie chosen to be, then he would have easily swept the elections, but that required intention and courage, two qualities the 2016 Bernie campaign The Bernie campaign lacked, and he demonstrated that by pitifully endorsing the murderous Hillary Clinton. By some miracle, Bernie again found himself placed in front of another deep state tool 4 years later, as the Democratic primaries had narrowed the playing field down to just two individuals, creepy Joe Biden and Bernie. Suddenly, as if through divine intervention, Bernie was given a second chance to retake his failed moral test of 2016 and make amends with the conscience that earlier made a total coward of him. The divine intervention took the form of the Democratic National Committee blatantly blocking of Tulsi's right to speak in the March 15th debate, and with a last-minute change in the rules forcing an eligible candidate to have over 20% of the delegate votes. Here it was. Bernie had the chance to stand for justice by defending Tulsi's right to speak and expose the evil agenda of the deep state that had unjustly conspired to destroy his own campaign in 2016. Doing this would have moralized the Democratic base profoundly and given the people something to actually believe in. This would have demonstrated that Bernie had the moral capacity to withstand the slings and arrows of the outrageous fortunes of the deep state and carry out the type of reform he had spent a lifetime campaigning for. But instead, Bernie chose the easy path of not being once again and rendering himself impotent and obsolete by stroking Biden and letting Tulsi hang in the wind. Alexander.
Well, I think this is a very, very fine analysis using an interesting literary example of the fundamental problem with Bernie Sanders. I mean, when you are in a state of crisis, and the United States and the world is in the middle of a crisis at the moment. We have a massive healthcare crisis with this epidemic, pandemic raging. We also have a massive economic crisis with the US economy and the economies of all the major states now in severe contraction, millions of people losing their jobs. Millions of people are very, very worried about their finances. Lots of people worried about what kind of condition they're going to be in when the pandemic abates. When you're in this kind of situation, what people look for is somebody who is strong, who is able to make decisions, and who can manage things. Now, Bernie has all sorts of ideas. He's got ideas about the health service. He's got ideas about the economy. He might be wonderful. These ideas may be brilliant and very well thought out. But he has consistently shown an inability to actually do what must be done in any given situation. He didn't take on Hillary Clinton in 2016. When the nomination was stolen from him. And I use that word advisedly because that was what happened. He has consistently failed to take the battle to Joe Biden in the Democratic contest, the contest to be the Democratic Party's candidate for the presidency in this election cycle. He's failed to stand up for Tulsi Gabbard, which has been astonishing because she was arguably the person who was his major potential ally, and now the result is that she's backing Biden instead. And the effect must be that a lot of people in the United States who might be drawn to Bernie because they fundamentally agree with his criticisms of the healthcare system and of the economic system in the United States must be saying to themselves, well, who is this person? He might have all sorts of great ideas. I might agree with him philosophically, but I don't want him in charge. Because if he is in charge, he's not going to be able to stand up to the forces that are going to be arrayed against him, you know, the deep state, the billionaires, the Wall Street, the healthcare industry, the insurance companies, all of those people. He's not going to be able to stand up to them, and he's not going to be able to make decisions and fight for me, because whenever he has to make decisions that really matter, he dithers. And he does. He dithers all the time. And this is, of course, what Hamlet does. Hamlet is, of course, the most famous play in English literature. It is the play about someone who can never take his many ideas and convert them into action. I mean, you have all these wonderful soliloquies that he's saying, all these extraordinary thoughts, all these brilliant ideas that are floating around his head. But ultimately, what do the people who are around him see? Well, if you know the play as well as I do, and every, you know, most English people know this play very well, what do you see? You see someone who, to all appearances, is mad, because he actually retreats and pretends that he's mad. How can you follow a leader like that? So the result is Hamlet. He's never able to see through any of his projects. And though I hesitate to say that anybody thinks that Bernie is mad, the fact is nobody looking at Bernie is going to think that he is going to follow through on any of his projects either. But if Bernie is an extreme example of this, well, so many others at this time have turned out to be. Also,
he is a tragic figure,
and let's remember this,
like Hamlet.
He's a Hamlet, you know. It's called the tragedy of Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. It's the tragedy of Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, and it is the tragedy of Bernie Sanders. And a tragedy isn't just somebody who's a sad person, because, you know, we're both Greeks, and we're steeped in our literature of our own country. I'm also steeped in English literature, by the way. My wife's an English literature academic, just saying. But I mean, tragedy, as we know, the point about tragedy is that what creates a tragedy is the actions of the protagonist himself. It's the protagonist who creates the tragedy, either by his crazy decisions or, as in Hamlet's case, by his inability to make decisions. And Burney is a tragic figure in exactly how the Hamletian sense. But so, of course, are so many others. I mean, where is Biden in this crisis? He's hiding in his house. Well, fine. I mean, you know, he's got to no doubt protect himself, but he gives away these mumbling, incoherent interviews and things, which is provoking strong reactions even from his interviewers. And I know you have a theory about this, but I mean, frankly, anybody who's looking for leadership or decision there is not going to find it. And I'm sorry to say, this is also the pattern internationally. So we have Merkel, who has, to all intents and purposes, vanished. I mean, where is she? She's never at any point, even before she went into quarantine, never at any point given strong leadership in this. We haven't seen Boris Johnson's been changing his mind visibly. He can't come up with a strategy that he sticks to. So he's gone from a position right at the beginning where he was barely taking this thing seriously and was talking about sitting back and letting herd immunity take hold, to one in which he is now trying desperately to catch up, even though he's far behind the curve. So that's Boris Johnson. And you see so many other leaders around the world who are in exactly the same situation. But of course, if Bernie is an extreme example, so is Biden. And I have to say, Trump is not. I'd wondered how he would respond to a crisis like this. I thought that he might prove to be an effective crisis manager. He gave a very uncertain and unsure start at the beginning because he clearly wasn't. I mean, this hit him so completely unexpectedly. But now he's there. He's visible. He has his advisors. He has his experts. He gives regular press conferences. He gives instructions. You're hearing about how ventilators have been transferred around the United States and have been sent to New York. A fact many American people may not know is that he's been phoning up, apparently, and getting the U.S. government to prowl around the world trying to buy up ventilators pretty much everywhere that they can be found and are available. He's doing all kinds of things. Now, not all of those things may be right. Not all of these things may work. Many of these things we may disagree with. But at least he appears to be trying to get on top of this thing. And in a crisis, the appearance of action is often what is needed in order to instill confidence. It gives people the impression that there is a man there in the White House who's actually in charge. And that's what Trump is doing. Now, with Bernie, we can't really see that. With Biden, even less. With Merkel in Germany, definitely less. With Johnson, well, as I said, he's still in his dithery phase. People are still giving him the benefit of the doubt. I wonder for how long. If you look further afield, Xi Jinping in China did eventually get a grip and take control. And I have to say this, so did Putin. I mean, Putin gave a rather impressive address to the nation, which the other day. And he also announced a package of measures, which I think was carefully calculated, both to support the economy and to give reassurance to people. And also, I mean, some of them were, you know, very strong populist gestures too. And populist gestures, by the way, in a time like this, are entirely appropriate. That's the other thing. You need to get people to feel that the person in charge actually cares about you. So, yeah, you're seeing who are the leaders and you're seeing who are not. And in a crisis, you will be judged, and judgment will be delivered very soon.
And so, Alexander, going back to Hamlet, the dilemma of the to be or not to be question that is posed is, you know, you have a prince who's saying, I'm either going to lead my people against the invasion and the war with Norway. Correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. Or I'm going to enact revenge upon my uncle. In other words, I'm going to succumb to my most primal instincts and just my selfish instincts that revenge against my uncle for what had happened. And in the case of Hamlet, he chose poorly, and then the tragedy unfolded in front of him. In the case of Bernie, he chose poorly. But in the case of Trump, you can make the analogy that Trump could have, and I'm not saying he's not playing politics, but he could have, you know, appeared to play politics like Pelosi did by stopping the two trillion stimulus package. So Pelosi actually went the route of, I'm going to try to take my enemy down.
No.
Trump could have played that game. He didn't. Instead, he decided to work with Cuomo. He decided to work with Gavin Newsom in California. He's tried to reach out to people that were his enemies. And he chose the path of leading his country against the invading force, in this case, the CV, the corona. No. I mean, you know, I'm you know, being generous in my analogy, but you can make that analogy that where Pelosi took the path of, I am going to strike my enemy down and I'm not going to look after my constituency, my people. Trump kind of took the different path and said, you know what, I'm not going to go down that route. I'm gonna try to lead my people out of this mess.
Well, can I just say, I mean, you know, Matt Herod is a very fine writer. There's a lot about his interpretation of Hamlet which could be challenged. I mean, I'm not sure that is the dilemma that Hamlet is actually confronting, whether he's really worrying about whether to go after Claudius, his uncle, or lead the people against the Norwegians. I mean, it seems to me that's a rather structured interpretation of what Hamlet is all about.
But if that was the interpretation,
But the point is, the indecision is exactly right. I mean, that does describe the indecision. Now, can I just say, Trump has shown a capacity to make decisions and to act on those decisions. He's come up with ideas. He's been, as I said, pushing the Federal Reserve Board to do things. Some people would say the wrong things, but at least he's pushing them to make decisions. He's been putting together stimulus bills through the Congress. He has reached out to his enemies. He does understand, I mean, I think he generally understands that this is a crisis and he must lead the United States and the American people through it because he is their president. I mean, he's trying, and I don't think he's failing. I think he's trying and to a great extent succeeding to project a leadership role. And that the result is, by the way, that his figures, his ratings are rising, and are rising significantly. Now, Bernie has proved a complete, you know, he's completely at a loss in this, clearly. I mean, he's still, instead of saying, this is what Trump should be doing in this situation, he's talking still about, you know, revising the entire healthcare system of the United States, which nobody's interested in at this moment. At least they're not looking for that. Biden, as I said, is virtually the invisible man. As for Trump's opponents, his Democratic Party opponents in Congress, the Pelosi's, the Schumer's, and all the others, they are still fighting partisan battles. I mean, they are insisting, for example, and there were all these, you know, provisions in this bill, this relief bill that has just been winding its way through the Congress. I mean, there's one that says, for example, that you can't use funding to build his border wall. Trump can't use funding to build the border wall. Now, I mean, is this really the time to make that kind of point? There's an even more, and I thought utterly petty one, which is that the federal government can't use any of the funding for Donald Trump's own companies. I mean, why bring that up now? I mean, why, you know, act in this mean-spirited and petty way? Surely, in a time of crisis like this, the right thing for the Pelosi's and the Schumer's and all the rest to do is to say Donald Trump is the president of the United States. In this situation, we're going to support the federal government in everything that it can. They should be rushing around to the White House. They should be appearing in the press conferences with him. They should be giving the president and the federal government all the support that they can to deal with this crisis. I'm not suggesting that they put aside all their divisions. I'm not saying that they should say that Donald Trump is the greatest president the United States has ever had. But what they should be saying is, we are a united people. We are facing this crisis and we're facing it together. Instead, as I said, they're coming up with these snarky provisions to this bill, which frankly, I don't think should be there. And which just show a mean spirit, which is completely inappropriate to these times. Can I just give an example? This is from history of what happened in another case of tremendous crisis, and which perhaps gives us an example of what you do in a crisis. In the 18th century, there was a massive earthquake in Lisbon. 75,000 people were killed. The Prime Minister of Lisbon, a man called Pombal, was almost killed in that earthquake himself. People then asked him, what are you going to do in this, you know, terrible catastrophe? And he said, running to the scene of the catastrophe, rescue the living, bury the dead. And he did. He absolutely organized a relief operation on a titanic scale, which is still apparently an exemplar of how it should be done. And if you go to Lisbon now, and it's a beautiful city, he eventually rebuilt it. So that is leadership. That's what you do. You deal with the crisis that you face. You put aside partisan quarrels, which Pelosi and Schumer and the Democrats in Congress seem unable to do. And you actually make practical decisions and propose practical solutions, which again, Bernie and Biden also seem unable to do. Trump at least is trying. As I said, not all his decisions may be right, but in the nature of things, you can't ever say in a crisis like this that all your decisions are going to be right. Some of them will turn out wrong, but you keep going, you keep adapting and changing your position, your tactics all the time. But your strategy should be that you're out there and you're dealing with things constantly. And that is what Trump is trying to do.
Well said, Alexander. Are there any other lessons that can be learned, not from history, but maybe from literature, as to the times we're living in right now, the leaders that we have right now, the decisions being made by the leaders, good or bad, the heroic figures, the tragic figures? Is there anything that comes to your mind?
Well, I mean, you know, again, I mean, if we look at other, you know, people who are remembered as heroes by their nations. I mean, Churchill, again, I mean, his approach was very practical. And he and his opponents in the Labour Party, they reached out to each other. So they formed a coalition government, which piloted Britain through this crisis. And the result was that both the leaders of the Labour Party at that time, Clement Attlee and Ernest Bevin, and Churchill, their stature was vastly increased. And after the war ended, the Labour Party, which eventually won an election, had the support of the people to carry out a major reform programme, not so very different from the one that Bernie is proposing. But the point is that they understood at the time that there was a crisis. They didn't come along to Churchill and say to Churchill, "Well, you know, we're prepared to support you, but we want in return, and now, you know, the major thing to do now is to establish a national health service." you deal with the crisis that you have, and that's after you've done that, then you gain the goodwill and the support of the people. And you can carry out these broad reforms. Bernie's not going to carry out any reforms because he's lost his chance. He lost it in 2016. He's lost it in 2020. This ought to be made for him. He ought to be going out, So given what a weak opponent Biden is appearing to be, he ought to be going out, he ought to be phoning up Donald Trump, saying to Donald Trump every day, look, I think this is, you know, this is what you're doing here. You need to do more of this. You need to do more of that. We need to organize committees. We need to sort out movements of how to control movements between this, whatever it is, whatever ideas Bernie has. And then if he builds up his reputation and support from that, well, maybe he can develop a real movement and people will actually warm to him, to his ideas. But he's lost it. So first you deal with the crisis, then you implement your longer range plans. That's also, by the way, what Franklin Roosevelt did in the United States in the 1930s. At the moment, these people don't seem to understand that it's the crisis they have to deal with. They're lost still with their particular partisan issues or their great philosophies and projects, which are for another day.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Bernie is, I think that's what attracts us to people like Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, is Bernie is the goat. He's the loser. He's the tragic figure. Donald Trump, like him or not, he's the, for lack of a better word, he is the heroic winning figure. Like him or not, I think that's what attracts you know, the media and all the attention to these two figures.
Well,
I mean, are there any other?
Well, I mean, you know, if you want to say this, I mean, we're going to pursue literary things. I mean,
I think you're leading into my question. Go ahead. That's my question.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of literary prototypes of Donald Trump. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of characters in Marlowe, for example, you could compare him to. Well, you know, I mean, you might see him as a villain. I mean, like, say, you know, in Marlowe's Tamerlane, you know, he's a villain. But the point about Tamerlane is that he may be a villain, but he's a villain who goes on winning because he is actually capable of continuous action. And, you know, he's got the dynamism and force to keep going. And, of course, Trump has that kind of energy about him. I mean, I think it was our colleague Peter Lavelle who said that, you know, he doesn't look tired. Well, he has looked tired sometimes. But the fact is that does have a kind of heroic quality. And Marlowe's Tamerlane, it does have a heroic quality also. And, you know, heroes and villains, these are literary concepts more than anything else. But if you're going to adapt them, yes. I mean, you know, you can look at Donald Trump and you can see a lot of that.
And I have to ask this final question, Alexander, is what is your take from Hamlet? Like, what did you take from Hamlet?
Oh,
you had to sum it up. Very
well, cool. I can't sum it. I mean, you know, Hamlet is one of these plays I see lots of times. I change my mind about often, and it depends very much on who's interpreting it and who's directing it, because you can do it in so, so many different ways. I would personally say that Hamlet is a play about the ineffectiveness of a good man confronted by evil. I think this is where I disagree with Eret. I think that Claudius, his uncle, is a profoundly evil and very sinister person. And Hamlet knows it, but he's incapable of fighting him. And that's exactly, if we go back to Bernie, what happened with Bernie and Hillary Clinton.
Bernie and Hillary Clinton what you described?
Bernie knew what a profoundly evil person Hillary Clinton was. I mean, I think so. But ultimately, he was incapable of taking action against her, even though he had it in his power to do so. Hamlet has it in his power to move against Claudius. He has the strength. He has the support of the people. He could do it. He's also, by the way, the rightful king, if you think about it, because he's the son of the king. So he's the rightful king. Claudius is a usurper, but he can't bring himself to act against Claudius. Even though Claudius is a usurper who's murdered his father and married his mother, Bernie Sanders was the rightful candidate of the Democratic Party, much more support amongst the American people than Hillary Clinton ever did. And he wasn't prepared in the end to act against her. So in the end, she devoured him. And I think that was why he's failed so completely. In 2020, he's not had that support that he had in 2016.
All right, excellent video. Alexander McCurse, Editor-in-Chief of The Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell. Smash that like button. Also, donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps out this channel a whole lot. We appreciate it. And go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merchandise, magic mugs, awesome t-shirts, all kinds of good things. Hamlet approved. I think Hamlet would definitely be drinking out of our magic mugs.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't know whether Hamlet himself would. I mean, he's such a dithery character. But we who are strong and purposeful people, we definitely drink from our magic mugs. And of course, our viewers do also, because they're all strong and purposeful people, which is why, of course, they come to the Durant. And since we're talking about strong and purposeful people, well, here is a strong and purposeful person on this magic mug. It's Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia. If you ever listen to him and see him in action, you will see how non-Hamletian he is. He's very decisive and very strong-minded. And I've heard it said by, you know, several people, including a diplomat that I know, a British diplomat that I know, that in fact, if you can survive a meeting with Sergei Lavrov, it is the great test of you as a diplomat. I mean, he is utterly relentless. His mind is clear. He's got all his facts at his fingertips, and he expresses himself very clearly and sometimes very forcefully too. So he is a brilliant diplomat, and that is why, since we are primarily a geopolitics channel, that's why we have him on one of our mugs. And these are the best mugs anywhere. I say that without equivocation, no Hamletian indecision about that. I've had lots of mugs in my time. These are the best. They are made of the best porcelain I've ever seen in a mug. That's why they're so strong and light, and why they look so good and feel so good. If you know a lot about porcelain, as I do, by the way, you will know how good these mugs are. And they keep your tea and coffee perfectly hot for much longer than cheaper mugs do. And of course, they don't crack or chip or break or lose colors or any of those things, because they are the best mugs ever. And I say that without any hesitation or doubt at all. And also, I say the same with equal confidence about the shirts we provide, like this amazing polo shirt I'm wearing at the moment, the epitome of smart casual, 100% cotton, phenomenally stylish, perfect to wear in the most glittering occasions, ultra fashionable in every respect, but if I can also say immortally fashionable. It's the kind of a classic garment that will look good 5 or 10 years from now. It never goes out of fashion. And you see there, it's got the double-headed eagle of the Durant, which is, of course, our emblem. It is the double-headed eagle that hovers over the world and sees and knows all, as we aim to do. So you can get these amazing polo shirts. You can get amazing T-shirts also, long-sleeved and short-sleeved, which are equally well made, also 100% cotton, also incredibly strong and enduring. You also have V-neck shirts, you've got hats and hoodies and stickers, and you've also got our amazing ebooks on subjects like Russiagate and Ukrainegate. Russiagate, Ukrainegate, farce masquerading as tragedy, but there we go. And also Epstein, well, there's a tragedy in every sense. And of course, Brexit, which is a more complicated story, maybe a tragic comedy, but who knows. So you can find all these books on the Durant in our shop. You can find all these amazing items. You can support us by coming to our shop, and we entirely rely on you to support us. So don't hold back. Come to our shop. Buy these extraordinary and wonderful things. Support the Durant. Alex will tell you how.
Just go to thedurantshop.com. You'll find a link in the description box down below. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.